So we are going to be talking some coaching topics or a coaching topic. Usually what we've done in the past is this has been part of our 4.4 miles podcast, but we decided we want to keep the 4.4 miles strictly Spurs and Arsenal banter, and pretty much me just
throwing it at me, absolutely chucking it.
This podcast now is going to be solely for coaching. So
and players, what, you know, can really get some insight to what their coaches might be going through or feeling or suggesting. So we also want to make sure that as players, you can listen to this and understand what goes through a coach's mindset at certain points. So,
yeah, I've often said I wished I'd done my coaching badges when I was a player, when I was younger, because it does give you a deeper insight into, you know, what's happening, the game, into coaching, into people management, into, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So, yeah, what I wanted to talk about is, and I think you alluded to it on one of the previous 4.4 miles podcasts, was goal setting and using goal setting as a way of kind of not only managing sort of the game, not only managing motivation, but as a way of using it as a barometer for performance.
Yeah,
you know, and it's something I've done for a number of years.
I think last when I mentioned it in another episode, it was because I paid you a compliment by saying, instead of saying to a team, go out there and win, let's just get five crosses in there, five shots in 40 minutes and see what happens. And I think that is a goal set, as a target set. So there's, you know, we can talk about in a game, as a team, season long, individually, you know, there's a lot of targets. So,
yeah, I think one of the things I'll preface this with is while the aim is always to go out and win a game, you know, I don't think there's a player in the world that says to themselves, you know, I'm going to go out, I'm going to go and play football, play soccer, and I don't want to win today. You know, everybody wants to go and win. And I think the players should bring that mentality. And I think my players know I don't like to lose. But they should know I don't like to lose because in training, I'm setting them up in a way where they can go into a game and they can play in such a way that they'll expose their opponent, dominate their opponent, and then hopefully go on to win it. So I like to look at the outcome goals. And
I mean, by goals, you mean, you know, targets. Like our goal is to move the ball in the final third. Our goal is to, you know, penetrate the back four, get behind the wing backs, get crosses in. So when you're talking about goals, you're talking about
goals as in goal
setting. Yeah, not actual. I want to win 10-0.
Right.
No style.
Right. Absolutely. I think
I would take, you know, as a Tottenham fan right now.
I think we have to remember we're in the entertainment business. Yeah. I know it's become more of a business.
It's still entertainment from day one.
It's entertainment, you know. I tend to look at the outcome goals. When I'm looking at outcome goals on a season-long basis, the questions, and I do this, we have a meeting with the players and we'll basically say, right, well, in terms of outcomes, where do you want to come? Where do you want to finish in the league? Where do you want to finish in the State Cup?
Long-term goals.
And, you know, I don't let players say first, where I want to finish champion. What I would rather you did is say, I want to finish top three. You know, come towards the end of the season.
Yep.
If we're in a chance where we can win a division,
then great.
Then we can start to kind of, you know,
get champion mindset.
Think about that a little bit more. But in my mind, the seasons out here are 8 to 10 games. Yeah. So if you can perform to the best of your ability in 8 to 10 games, you'd have a chance at winning your division. So the outcome goals, they'll choose where they want to finish in the division. they'll also choose where they want to finish in the State Cup. And again, with the State Cup, it's like, we want to get to the Final Four. Yeah. Or, you know, we want to try to get... Last year, we went out in the group stage. So we want to get out of the dreaded group of death, the quarterfinal. Yeah. Or, you know, whatever it is. so that's the kind of outcome. Then what I do is I look at the process. So if you're saying you want to finish in the top three, how many games, what's your win draw loss ratio going to be? And so let's say they say, well, we think realistically to win the league, we need to win 7 games.
Out of 10.
Yeah. Out of 10. So then that's basically your target for, that's basically the process by which you want to achieve your outcome.
Yep.
And then we'll break that down even further. And we'll say, so we'll look at a goals per game average. We'll look at a goals against average. Yep. And obviously you want your goals per game to be higher than your goals against average. Yep. Generally, that means that if it works out that way, you're going to be winning most of the games or all of the games because you're expected to score more. And then we look at where those goals will come from. So we ask, can we get 2 goals from defense? Can we get 10 goals from midfield? Yep. Can we get, 15 goals between strikers? Yep. So we break it down like that. And I do that for all of my teams, regardless of what level they play for, or what level they play at.
But it kind of goes to that kind of thing you see in boardrooms all the time, that SMART objective, right? It's specific. It's for champion. It's for State Cup. Is it measurable? We have 7 games. Is it realistic? Yeah, because we won the State Cup last year. You know, what time frames are, well, we have 7 games, we're not going to win all 7 games in 1 week, so we can take our time. Or, so is it realistic? Is it achievable? Is it measurable? How do you measure it? I mean, how do you measure goals? I mean, parents will say, well, we want to win every trophy this year possible. Let's enter 12 cup competitions, win every single one. It's not possible because players get tired.
Yeah.
I think some people, like, parent goals are the worst thing in the world. When parents say, what are our goals for the season? I'm like, play attractive soccer. Oh, I don't like him. He didn't say the word winning or championship. That's just play attractive soccer.
Yeah. And I've always been able to tackle that, that kind of winning
mentality
argument with parents, where I say, well, your kids should want to come to every game and want to win.
Yeah.
So you focus on that. I'm the vehicle, I'm providing the vehicle by which they're going to be able to get to that, what they want to achieve. And so I'm basically just going to put together the process. Yeah. I'm going to use my curriculum to develop a process and a style of play, which when it's done properly, gives them a good chance at winning the game.
I think
anything can happen. So you can't say it will win games. Yeah. Anything can happen.
I've been at a few clubs, different size. I'm about to have now FC Portland, which is a big, big club. But 4 or 5 years ago, the same coaching director, Jason Carney.
Well, you've got to be involved with one big club, haven't you? Not Spurs.
South London. But like 10 years ago, when I first met Jason Carney, who's a fantastic director of coaching, really passionate about being a director, we were at Foothills, tiny little club, one team at each age group. Not a lot of success. And they're a really decent sized club now. But he said, I need you to sign this. I'm like, what is it? He goes, it's my club philosophy. And I think for the first, it's like 20 pages long. And now he's got the same kind of philosophy, FC Portland. It isn't about winning. It's about competing. It's about doing your best. It's about giving your players tools for life and on the soccer field, which I thought was great. And I signed it this week and took it back to him at the office. He goes, that was quick. Did you read it? I said, I don't need to read it all because I've read it before from you. I know what you're talking about. You don't, you're not. Success to me, Wayne, is as a coach, you need to win every game, every tournament, and getting the kids coming back. Player retention is like most clubs' ambition. They won't tell you that. Get those kids keep coming back. It's tryout season. Yeah. So there's probably many of you listening right now thinking, oh, I'm going to try this club and that club and this club. And your coaches are like, I wonder if they're coming back. What have I done right or what have I done wrong for these players to leave or want to come back?
I mean, a lot of the time, it's not even about what you did right, what you did wrong. Yeah. Sometimes, there's a belief that you need to be playing at a certain level. Sometimes you're not able to see the education you're getting because you might not be getting the results. And I'll be absolutely sort of open and honest where we've been building up. I took over my current team, and defensively we were not
great. That's 2005s, right?
That's 2005s, yeah. We were not great defensively. We worked on our 1v1. We worked on our functional defending, worked on our defending in a unit. We've done a lot of tactical defending, and we were very, very difficult to beat. You know, we never lost a game by more than one. We were keeping a lot of clean sheets. And so that was great. But early on, there was a lot of upset parents because we were in tournaments and we were getting slapped all over the place. Yep. Because we didn't know how to defend and I hadn't had enough time to change.
Are these local tournaments or are you going to California and getting slapped?
No, these are okay. local tournaments. And then, you know, we played against state cup winners and that kind of stuff in our full season last year. No, maybe the spring season the year before. Like I say, we didn't win as many games, we weren't getting beat. We were getting ties from, what is the big four in our division. Mm-hmm. We're just outside that big four in the division. And so the aim going into...
It sounds a bit like Arsenal, just outside the top four.
Oh, yeah, right. And this is why I'm so kind of behind Arteta, because I've put together a three-year plan. And basically what we want to do is... Can we make ourselves difficult to beat? Because if we can make ourselves difficult to beat, we'll pick up points. Yeah. And I feel like that's what Arteta's doing with Arsenal at the moment. Then it's, can we start to find a balance between defense and attack where we can start to score more goals? And in that period of trying to find balance, can we start to define our playing style, yeah. how we use possession? You know, how we possess the ball with purpose. And once we're able to do that, because when you possess the ball and you possess it well, it's a form of defense.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not letting your opponent have it. And so they can't.
Whether it's in the middle third, the attacking third, or the defensive right. third, if you've got the ball,
yeah.
you're attacking. You have Absolutely. The ball, you have possession, you have the opportunity.
So. Yeah. And you know, the aim for this season that we've just had in the winter was to go. Now that we can defend and we've got our mid block and our low block sorted, now can we really put a focus on high pressure? Can we take the game to some of these teams and try to win the game by sort of putting them under pressure in their defensive yeah. third? But what we didn't have, and I think you saw quite a few of the games, and you've got some players that we played against, is we didn't have enough covering speed at the back.
Okay.
So where we've got our forwards going to press the ball, midfield coming up to try to press the ball, a ball over the top killed us. And so because of COVID, we had some key players that didn't come out and we lost a lot of speed because of that. And so in my mind, I'm looking at, right, we lost the year because of COVID, but going into this next year, we should be able to sort of pick up where we kind of left off. Let's go high press. Let's go put these teams under pressure. We've got the speed at the back now because those players are now coming back and playing. So we can afford to squeeze up to the halfway line, knowing that we can give you 40 yards in behind. Yeah. You're going to get caught when you're running behind.
Absolutely.
So
let me ask you this.
But the parents are going to be looking at a difficult season.
Your shareholders.
Not taking the context into consideration. Yeah. And now they're off. Now they want to go. And so, I mean, you know, it is what it is. There isn't anything you can do about
no.
that.
Parents are shareholders.
But, right. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I don't like to lose.
No one does. Any sport. I mean, we're in this as coaches. Yeah, one, because we want to build successful, competitive, fun soccer teams that people want to come and watch. I was watching this game on the weekend. What a great team. That guy, Angelo, he's got his team playing really well. They lost 2-1, but they really enjoyable to watch. Rarely do you get a parent turn around and say, we've lost 6 games, but man, we're fun to watch. Because that parent after 5 defeats would be like, well, we're thinking about leaving now. Because, you know, my daughter's 9 and she wants to go to Stanford to play soccer. And this is not the path we want for her. So really, she's 9, you know, so... Let me ask you this. As a coach of great experience, and with some, I know most of your teams, and we've worked together in the past, when you sit down with a brand new team and you write your philosophy and your curriculum for you as an individual coach, not as a club director, do you set up to win or set up not to lose a game, per game?
Like I said, you should always be going into, I don't think they're separate. Yeah. I think they're very much the same. The game has phases. You know, there is an attacking phase and a defensive phase.
Transitions.
And so you should be looking to encompass all of that into your game plan. So do I want to win the game? Absolutely. And I want to win that in the attacking transition and in the attacking phases. Do I not want to lose the game? Absolutely. And I'm going to work on that in my defensive and my defensive transition phases. I want to be hard to play against, both defensively and offensively. You know, so I think both. Whenever I first go into a team, though, I always start with defending.
Always start at the back.
Always start at the back.
So a leading question to that would be, okay, you talked about your team are maybe fifth in their tier, in their division, in their conference. So if you're playing that top team for a place in like the final of State Cup, or you're playing the top team in your age group, and I can think who it might be, do you set up an all-out attacking team? Or do you have a nice balanced team? Or do you say, okay, I need three holding centre mids. So in theory, I've got seven midfielders, and then maybe we break them on the counter-attack with some pace.
No, I think we always have to play with balance.
You need everything.
I think
there's moments in the game where you can say, we're 3-0 up, maybe 10 minutes left. Let's just take out a couple of the flair players and put in a couple of more gritty midfielders just to keep possession on the halfway line. We've won the game. It's not unless you're Tottenham and you're 3-0 up with 10 minutes to go against West Ham. Throw it away. There's been times when I've coached where I'm like, okay, we're winning comfortably or we're losing comfortably, uncomfortably, I should say. I'm like, let's make some changes because we're not going to win. The best thing we can do now is give other players a chance to get out there and actually learn something from the situation in the game. Okay, you got to go out there now for 10 minutes. Don't concede a goal. Play in defense.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at least get one goal. Go out there and just pull out attack.
I think if you're trying to develop a player, you're trying to develop a player that understands everything and that can kind of, maybe not necessarily that can do everything, but who has a good IQ in terms of how the game is
played. Soccer intelligence.
So even your flair players need to learn how to manage a game. Yeah. So if you're 3-0 up, and you're starting to see that the other team, they've changed their formation slightly. They've gone with three strikers.
Exactly, yeah.
We need to know how to adapt to that. We need to know how to kill momentum and how to basically take the sting out of them by keeping the ball. I don't know that I would make changes for that. It may mean that one of the attackers, for example, the center forward who's been... We've been pressing high and the centre forward's been pressing the two centre backs and trying to force them to go in one direction. It might be now that the forward now is going to drop off and play in between the two centre midfielders. Yeah. And the same plan is drop off in front of the centre midfielders. Yeah. So we've got three compact lines between their midfield and their forward line. And again, that centre forward directs which way the
pressure comes,
which way we're going to the pressure's coming from, and how we get compact on that side of the field. So, I wouldn't change players for it, but I would definitely kind of maybe tweak the game plan. Which is why curriculum is so important. Yeah. You know, our job is to teach the players the game. I find reactive coaching. Oh, this weekend, you know, we got beat by a long ball. So I know we've been working on our combinations on the edge of the box.
Yeah.
And in the final third for the last 3 weeks. But this week, we're gonna work on how to defend. There's no continuity to it.
Yeah.
My curriculum's my plan's a three-year plan. First year is all about defense. Second year is going to be about how we defend high and how we, when we win possession back, how we recognize times to counterattack, how we recognize times to keep possession. Then the final year is all about, we've got the framework now. We can defend when we have to. We can win the ball back high. We know now when we can counterattack to go to goal, how we can kind of if the opportunity to counter isn't there, how we can keep possession of the ball. Now, let's build on that and let's turn all of that into goals.
You know? And I think you need, I mean, again, you're coaching 2005s. You know, I love that age group. I've done that for the ODP for a couple of years. It's that age where you can catch them with that intelligence and they start actually really understanding the game when they don't have the ball. What are you doing when you don't have the ball? What are you scanning for? Yeah. What are you hoping is going to happen? How can you affect the game? I think what going back to, you said game management earlier, and when Spurs conceded the second goal this weekend, I think it was Lee Dixon turned around and he goes, well, Man United have really just switched on now. They're just managing the game. They were just passing the ball around 30 yards, 40 yards, not letting us get shape, not letting us pressure. And that comes from like just soccer intelligence, pure just, okay, you're 3-1 up or 2-1 up at the time. Let's just keep them quiet for 10 minutes. Nullify that kind of like counter-attacking soccer that Spurs can play. And Man United just passed the ball around easily, quickly, with efficient. And it's just like game management comes down to like four or five maybe super smart players with the ball at their feet. They don't have to be flair players. You put that plan, just don't give the ball away. Just keep possession. Treat the last 10 minutes like the world's biggest game of Rondo. Just don't let them touch. Don't let them move. Don't let them settle.
Just and whenever you see, whenever you see that there's a high pressure come in, can we go back into our keeper, draw them out, and then see if we can play through them? If the defense is coming out too high, can we drop it over the top and see if we can get that counter, that, you know, that kind of counter kind of goal?
At any level, you're only going to get those players if, like you say, you have a smart plan of anything. Okay, it's going to take us a while. You're 12, whatever. By the time you're 15, your understanding of the game will be sky high, way above those girls that might have 3 or 4 gold medals hanging up in their bedroom for winning.
From U9 competitions.
You know, winning competitions, competitions with no refs and tiny goals. But you will have soccer intelligence higher than any other kid that's got 25, 30 medals hanging on their bed, because they've been coached just to score and win, to score and win, and not to actually play and understand the game. There's playing the game and understanding the game. And I know 2 or 3 players that I work with that are on your club team that have that soccer intelligence. And that's because you've sat down with them and said, look, these are our goals. It's not 20 shots. It's play like this, work like that, and think like this.
Yeah, we go into every game. And like I said, like we said at the beginning, they're bringing the intensity to win the game. I'm now basically using training, giving them a vehicle with which they can go and win that game. And so on game day, the outcome goal isn't spoken about because, you know, I understand what it is that they want. They understand what it is that I want. But I drive home good performance. We want a good performance. We want to, you know, as an example for targets, we want to keep the number of penetrating passes that split our back line as low as possible. We want to possess the ball. So I'm going to give you a target of 8 consecutive passes. We'll count how many times you can make 8 consecutive passes without losing the ball. And then your third target might be, you know, we've worked on attacking from wide areas, for example, in training. So the target for the game is going to be, how many times can we get it to a wing back in the final third? So those would be 3 targets for the game. And basically, if you can do well against those targets, you're going to have a good chance of winning because it feeds into our style of play and how we want to play, how we want to dominate our opponent. But why it's so important is it takes away, you can use that kind of goal setting and those kind of target setting to take away the kind of negativity of losing. And I think if anybody misunderstands me and says, I'm okay with players losing, or I'm okay with players being happy after losing, that's not what I'm saying. You can lose and still have a positive experience. You know, losing shouldn't be demoralizing, shouldn't knock confidence, shouldn't do any of that sort of stuff. And so when we lose a game, we can always go back to our targets. How did we perform against target? We performed really, really well against target. Well, then we're unlucky. And this is why we say, just because we perform well against target doesn't mean we can win a game. You know, we just want to try to perform the best we can. And against target, we were brilliant. They were only able to split our defense two times, and they scored from those two. We were able to possess the ball really, really well. You know, we did our eight consecutive passes 11 times.
So when you talk about those consecutive passes, are you saying anywhere on the field? I mean, I don't want my team playing eight consecutive passes in their own box. Maybe in midfield a bit more, and then at the top, maybe a bit more urgency. So when and where do you split those parameters and target and say eight passes, but not in front of our goalkeeper because she's suspect?
But this is where I would just go out and say that my goalkeeper is definitely a suspect.
Great.
My goalkeeper is super.
I know, she's my goalkeeper too.
But again, you know, it all feeds into the game understanding. You know, you want teams to almost come onto you a little bit, which is why in the professional leagues, the playing out from the back is a hot topic at the moment.
Yeah.
You want teams to kind of come onto you so you can play through those lines and then into the space in front of their goal. You know, that's the aim. And so if it's eight passes across our back line, I'm okay with that because they're showing an intelligence and a patience to invite their opponent on.
Yep.
You know, the question is going to be, are we then able to move the ball up the field? And if not, then we can investigate that and we can, you know, work out what it is that, why we're not able. Are the midfielders showing at the right times? You know, are they understanding the triggers? You know, these kind of things.
I did a coaching course about 3 years ago with two Dutch guys that actually played youth soccer with the great Johan Cruyff. And they got the old X's and O's out and the chalkboard and some cones out. And it was at Providence Park under the lights. It was a great, great experience. And they said, you know, for a long time, the Dutch philosophy has been not to play out the back, but to play beautifully in front of the opposition's goal. And they showed several minutes of highlight reels of goalkeepers just punting the ball deep inside the opposition's half. And they called it arrow soccer. One long ball. And then 20 passes like that around the edge of the box. Yeah, they play beautiful football. There's some of the greatest players in the world are from Holland. Always have been. They always bring out one. Holland, they're always a team to me that I think should do better. Their club level is not as good as it probably should be. But they can be quite direct getting to goal, and then they make it super pretty around the goal. It's like one long place kick. That's not play out the back. Let's get it into the opposition stuff because that's where you score goals and goals wins games. And it was interesting to see like people who call Dutch football, you know, total football. No, just send it long and then play fancy in front of goal.
Well, it's funny actually because for those listening, way, if you go and watch a Dennis Bergkamp goal in the World Cup against Argentina,
long ball,
it was
some goal though.
First touch,
it was.
It's superb technique. I think just kind of finishing up on the sort of benefits of the goal setting is. If we look, like I was saying, if we lose a game, but we did well against target, then we know we were unlucky, you know, we performed well, let's keep going, we're going in the right direction. If we lose the game and we did poorly against our target, well, then we know why we lost the game. We know that we have to be better against target next time. And then if we win, generally, if you win and you haven't done well against target, I don't think the players really care that much. But you can always use it to reinforce that against the better team, it might not have been like this. And if you want to compete and achieve your goals that you've set at the beginning of the season, in terms of your outcomes for the season, you're going to have to perform against the stronger teams. And then if you win, but you were brilliant against target, then you can use that to reinforce the style of play, which is all linked into those goals that you've set.
And this is all like totally relevant and easy. Again, if you set out these mental goals, you know, they're not, we're going to win this, we're going to win that, and we're not going to do this. If you set them out early and you've got a team that believes in that system and wants to achieve a certain level of competitive soccer, whether it means they get ribbons on the end of the bed or means they just got good soccer IQ, I will give away all the soccer ribbons in the world for players who have got good IQ. And when, because, you know, we can only do a certain amount of joysticking with our players. You know, come here, do this, pull that. And we try not to joystick. We want them to be able to make decisions on their own, on the field, good or bad. And the more intellect we give these players, the bigger and quicker they grow mentally, because soccer's 99% of the brain. You know, the feet are just the tools. And the more we can give these players early on and get them to agree, this is our style, this is the targets we're setting. We're going to be a super dominant team in the final third. We're going to be patient in the middle and quick at the back. You know, and if, okay, I'm on it. Sign on the dotted line. I'm in. I believe in your philosophy. And even at our grassroots kind of level, up to like professional level, you have, when you go to sign for a club and you've got two clubs both willing to pay you $1 million a year, you're going to go to that club that is playing a certain style that you're attracted to, that you can stick to. Well, I'm not going to go and play for that club because they offer me twice as much, but they're long ball and it's boring and I'm a midfielder. But you're a striker, long ball, yeah, all day long. So, you know, getting those players behind you and getting the parents, and, you know, you're lucky that I'm going to find out very soon, you're lucky that you work for a club that lets you build your own curriculum to deal with those players. Because there are some clubs that say, no, you stick to this, win at any cost. And that's not fun. It is fun to win. It's horrible to lose.
Yeah. It's absolutely fun to win. You know, but like you say, we're trying to teach these players about how they can use their experiences from sport in their life, you know, and being able to set a goal that you write down, that you're able to, that you're basically able to use to inspire, to motivate yourself, can go into your work life, can go into your social life, can go, you know, can go into so many different areas of your life, that, you know, these are the things that we want to get players to understand, you know, and use moving forwards, just to kind of enrich their lives and make them better. You know, are they able to take that into their education? Are they able to take that into sort of, you know, when they go away to college?
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you
know, that kind they've of got stuff. Game focus, so, then yeah. They've got classroom focus. You know, I think someone taught me, I think it was one of my first coaching courses in the US with Nate Schatz and Mike Freitag. You know, uncoachable kids have become unemployable adults, which explains a lot about me, but... but it's true, and I still use it these days. If I can't coach you at 9, who's going to want to employ you at 16?
I think it's something that coaches should look to. And again, you don't have to use my examples of goals, but I think setting goals is a good standard, you know, for teaching young people sort of how to kind of manage themselves. Something they can take into all areas of life. But then from the coach's perspective, it's a really helpful tool to help you when you're kind of managing expectations, when, you know, when performances aren't going your way, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah, I mean, again, I think you have to take a little look sometimes at the personnel that you're working with, the age group. I mean, asking a 9-year-old, you know, who might not play soccer for another 2 years after this, to write a philosophy, to sign a curriculum or believe in your philosophy, they just want to have fun. But because of the age groups that we work with, it's important that they understand, you know, just because you don't have the ball doesn't mean you can't affect the game. Your mental like strength and your ability to control the game when you don't have the ball, when we don't have possession. Can you help move us around? Your target is to block off as many long balls as possible. By penetrating that player or stopping this and hurting this team by this, doing this. Yeah. You know, and I think if you've got certain individuals, and I know your team is pretty strong with some of those smart players, then it's a fun ride. It's a fun educational ride for everybody. You get to see the benefits of like 11 to 18 young ladies going out every weekend, playing with a smile on their face, win or lose. Like you said, if a girl comes off the field, hey, one, I gave my best. Two, we played really well. Three, we were just unlucky against a good team. That's going to happen. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time, I'd be pretty wealthy. But also, if I had a dollar every time I come off the field and said, we played awful today and we won, I'd be just as rich. You know, we didn't deserve to win today. But, you know, we played long ball a couple of times and I told you girls we weren't going to be that long ball team. But sometimes its effect is just to say, have it, and send it over the top.
Yeah. But again, you know, this is our role. If you're playing against the team and you're possessing the ball and you can see that the team is playing with a really high press and they're leaving a lot of room in behind, well, that is tactical play. Tactics is understanding your opponent's weakness and setting your team up with a strategy to take advantage of their weakness. You know, I mean, that's what we do. That's what the tactical side of the game is.
It's to penetrate, get passes behind the back line and getting crosses and putting four balls, putting eight crosses. Let's see what happens with those targets.
Yeah. How many crosses can you connect with? How many times can you work the keeper? There's so many different sort of topics or targets you can use. And I always link the targets into training so that it's a fresh focus because we've done it all week. Now take it into the game and see if you can use it in the game.
Absolutely, mate.
If you've enjoyed listening to us, you've got anything that you want to say, any comments for us, if you'd like to get in touch, maybe to tell us things that you would like to hear us talk about, you can find us on Twitter at Coaches Coach Pod. And we're also on Instagram, The Coaches Coach Podcast.